Afrimat's CEO, Andries van Heerden, is used to being celebrated when the financial results are released. But this time for the year to end February, very different. Very, very different. I suppose shareholders will be asking the question of whether the past few decades have been lucky and that now the luck's run out, or indeed if this is just a blip in the long-term progression of the company. We'll talk to Andries this morning. There's lots going on at the company that affects all of us in South Africa. So it'll be interesting to get some insights on many of those. So Andries, I'm not going to ask you to answer that number one question of whether you've just been lucky up to now and it's caught up with you or this is a blip. But I guess one needs to understand that when you invest, you like to go in diversified companies, and that tends to affect or help you from getting jolts in the road. Now, you have diversified your business. You started it many years ago. You can give us a nutshell of your path, but you've actually been almost preparing yourself for a day like today when you have to release financial results, which, as you said to me, Orfeo, are the worst you've ever had to contend with.
Yeah, Alec. Over the years, we started off as a pure construction materials business back in the day. We then realized that the construction industry is in for a tough time, and we started diversifying first into industrial minerals and then into bulk commodities. It's iron ore and anthracite, and the latest is into rare earths. That's still a project in progress. And as you say, that was exactly the strategy has always been and still is to diversify the business in a very, very tough economy to try and weather the storms. This time around, we had almost a perfect storm, if I can use the pun, where where things just happened simultaneously, and the impact was quite severe. We saw a dramatic pullback in iron ore prices, both domestically and internationally. That had quite a significant impact on our business. And that coincided with the takeover of Lafarge, and that is what we've always done. We've always bought businesses that are in distress. We know it's the first couple of years are not so easy, and then normally it works very well for us. This time around, the two coincided, and just the losses in the cement business and the reduction in iron ore prices, that explains about 85% of the reduction in profit year on year.
Yeah, and when you say reduction of profits, the headline earnings per share have, well, I won't say collapsed, because at least they are headline earnings, but down from 567 cents to 72 cents. And you know you're in our portfolio, Andries. You're part of the BizNews tribe now. They're watching this very closely. And I guess really Lafarge is the story here. You've spent a lot of money. It's the biggest acquisition. The brand is well known. It makes cement. You seemed, when we last spoke, 6 months after your half-yearly results, that you might have bought a bargain. When I read through the accounting now, it suggests it wasn't a bargain. In fact, you've had to do the opposite of what you did at the half-year stage and not write up the asset that you bought, but actually write it down.
Yeah, I think the accounting treatment, that's always that's up to the accountants to make sure that the balance sheet is as good a reflection of the reality as it can be, and not to try and create a false picture. That's always what we're trying to do. From an operational perspective, I really do think this is a really good business. We've seen, and over the years, I've seen it many times. Every time we buy a business in distress and you start turning it around, that first couple of months is really, really tough. And remember, we took over in May last year, after more than a year after we actually shook hands on the deal with the previous owners. So that business, that ship was without a captain for more than a year because of the prolonged approval process. And over and above the fact that the businesses were really, in my view, not well managed, you know, from in that year, a lot of damage was done, which we've turned around, and it's going a lot better already. The business as a total now, as we speak, is profitable. The cement business is still marginal, but picking up very quickly, gaining market share, getting its operations under control again. But it was a very, very sick patient that we took on board in May. And at this stage, I still think, you know, the accounting treatment, that's up to the accountants. And having a so-called bargain purchase in the balance sheet, I don't think is a good thing. And it's a good thing that we could sort of have that more realistic now that everything is said and done. But from an operational perspective, I will do exactly the same if I have the opportunity again to buy the business. It was a bargain.
And the people in Lichtenberg are presumably delighted because they've now got an anchor tenant that is there to stay.
Yeah, Lichtenberg is I don't know when last you were there, but that town is falling apart. It's just an example of how a local government should not be run. It's a big mess. But fortunately, we have our own sources. We have a direct Eskom supply. We have our own water. We have even our own little town there, a little village where our people stay. So we're a little isolated, but it's shocking. When I go there, it's shocking what's going on in that town.
Yeah. I guess you guys could do worse than speaking to Frans Grenier and what they've done in Senegal and Ivrystaat, where it's an interesting story, but that's a complete aside. What you've explained there about the cement plant being rudderless for a year almost reminds people, I think, listening to this, that that's where our government of national unity has been. They're now starting to do things properly, it seems, but it's always difficult, that initial stages, finding each other, getting the culture right, and so on.
Especially on a merger like this, you know, you use the word with culture. And we've always said that the most important part of our business is our culture. And the culture turnaround in a business that's been in trouble for such a long time and has been up for sale for so long, and turning that culture, that's actually a very positive, and I can carry on for a long time about all the positives about that. But it's also a process. It doesn't happen overnight. We always joke and say, you know, send them an email and tell them this is how we're going to work. That's how, unfortunately, how it works with people. You know, it takes process. Internally, we have a complete project plan, as you would have building a building. You know, similar approach to that. And those are the things that we had to do in this year. And unfortunately, it does cost money. And when you have machinery breaking down and things like that, and the fact that we had double the rainfall that the average annual rainfall in that area is about 700 millimeters per year. And I was there 2 weeks ago, and our guys on site told me that they're on 1,500 millimeters for the year so far. So that's why I said in the beginning, it's a bit of a perfect storm. You know, we had things that you normally don't have to contend with, together with some interesting challenges in the, you know, operationally, technically, with the business that was neglected, a factory that was neglected. What we did, we have the best team, I think, that money can buy or that you can lay your hands on. We've got them there, and they are making extremely good progress. And our results presentation will be on the web a little bit later. And you will see there that the progress that has been made, for instance, with the sales, with the launch of a new product, a very nice, innovative new product that we've launched that I think the long term is going to be very good.
A new product in cement. Yeah, that's got to be something.
Yeah.
What is it? What is it, just for interest's sake?
It's just the ultra low carbon cement that has a very low carbon footprint.
Andres, it's an interesting story, Afrimat. Always has been, and I've followed your progress, as have many in South Africa over many years. I'm delighted that we've now finally got you in the BizNews portfolio. But I guess right now, the swing factor is going to be Lafarge and whether or not you can get that right. You're clearly confident that you have. You're going to tell the investment community and show them the numbers about that. And I guess let's just park that for a while. But as far as the other parts of the business are concerned, the traditional business that people know you for, aggregates, in other words, building materials and things like that, that seems to be going great guns. But your two other businesses were also bumping up against, on the one hand, a bit of Transnet issues. Are you making any progress there? And indeed, there are many people waiting for some kind of alternative to Transnet on the rails, like we do have for Eskom in electricity. Is any progress on that side?
Yeah. So I think firstly on Transnet and the current management team, I must compliment them. They received a hospital pass, and I think Michelle and her team is doing a good job in trying to rectify things, and they are working with us as an industry very, very well. So I think that's the first point to make, is that up to right off the management team that they have there at the moment, they are really doing their best, Michelle and Solly and the team. Secondly, we are part of the Ore Users Forum, the OUF, where we've been working with Transnet for more than 2 years. We had a full evaluation done up the rail system, technical evaluation. There's a whole project plan of how to rectify, and that work has been going on probably for a good 18 months already. So we are slowly seeing some progress. At least the decline was arrested. Last year we were 20% under our allocation. This year we were 16% under. So it's a sort of slowly picking up, I believe.
What does that mean, Andres? What does that mean under your allocation?
So we have an allocation of 870,000 tons per annum that we can transport on the rail system and export through the harbour. And last year the actual numbers for the previous year was 20% below. This year it's 16.5% below our allocation. So we didn't get to the 870.
Is that a national thing that that everybody is 16 to 20% below, or is it just you? And the way I'm getting to there is, what might the impact be on the country as a whole if the efficiency can be improved and say you can export your full allocation?
Yeah. So they tell us that they have a so-called equity model where the four of us, we are only four exporters of iron ore on that line, Kumba being the biggest. And they say that we are equally impacted. I believe them. So it is the entire system. It's designed for 60 million tons of iron ore exports per annum. And we should then be 16%, 16.5% below that if we look at it as a country. So obviously that is probably calculations, there's probably about 10 million tons that we can as a country export extra once that system is fixed. But once again, a turnaround, unfortunately, it takes time. You know, just like we saw with Lafarge, it's not a magic wand that you can walk in and everything happens. There's good progress, there's good willingness from both parties. So from that perspective, it's going well. Secondly, we as a forum would participate, and unfortunately, I'm bound by a non-disclosure agreement, so I can't say too much about it, other than that we are actively participating in this whole process to possibly, as an industry, you participate in a public sector participation on the line. But unfortunately, there's a lot of detail that I would love to share. That are not allowed.
So you're doing a lot of work on it. It's interesting for people who haven't followed or don't, or a bit removed from it, in that many parts of the world, and I guess Australia would be the prime example, those rail lines are built by the companies. The companies manage their own rail lines to get the iron ore out. But of course, the volumes there are huge. I guess in South Africa's perspective, you guys would work together. We won't go there. The point is, there's progress. It's almost like with Eskom, we've got solar now and we've got an alternative. Something similar could be happening with rail.
Yeah, just as an aside, the interesting thing is that Kumba, who in those days was Ishkol Mining, built the system. They built it and then transferred it to Transnet somewhere in the 90s or something. And I'm not sure exactly where.
You
and we as a, love to have it back.
You mentioned Kumba and its history. AMSA, ArcelorMittal South Africa, is the old steel operation of what was then Eskor. And there's been going this way and that way. And I've spoken with Kobus Verstappen. And one day he's very unhappy that they're going to have to close down the Newcastle plant. And then he says, well, no, it looks like we've got a deal going. For you, it's very important because you actually supply that plant.
They actually buy the biggest bulk of our iron ore. About 60% of our iron ore that we produce is sold to ArcelorMittal. And as a matter of fact, we actually, although, you know, the full year numbers doesn't reflect that, but after the freeze they had last year where they froze two of their furnaces, we were only supplying Funabout Park at the time. Since then, our volumes to them have actually, our monthly sales to them have actually increased by a significant percentage. You know, we had a very frequent interaction with them. And once again, I had a lot of respect for Kobus and his team, what they are doing there to try and keep that business alive. And, you know, this speaking to him behind the scenes, you know, he's taking a lot of pressure to get right what needs to be done to save that business. I was with him a couple of days ago, and he's a lot more optimistic than he was a few months ago. So I agree with you, Naveez, where I also got the message a few months ago that this was the end for Newcastle and Vereeniging. He seems to be more optimistic now.
Yeah. Well, that's where I grew up, so I can tell you I've got lots of friends still living there who were on tenterhooks, but good news now that it might be going forward. And it's interesting just from a global perspective, and I know you follow the international affairs because you have to. That's your business. With Donald Trump's latest ructions, it might have just refocused people's attention on the fact that, hang on, you've got to look after yourself at least to some degree.
And especially when we consider the infrastructure that we need to build in South and repair in South Africa, two things, power lines. If you just imagine all the flat steel products that you will need for all the power lines that we need to build over the next 10 years. And the same with rail, with the rail tracks that we need to repair. I haven't gotten on the top of my head now, my colleagues have told me the other day how many kilometers of rail track needs to be replaced just on the Sishen-Saldanha line. You know, it's a lot of steel that needs to go there. So just those two would probably justify government to actually step in and make sure, within limitations, don't go the SAA way. But we, you know, there are ways to actually make sure that the industry can survive and that logic provides.
Yeah, and the recent idea of just bringing it in when you needed it, you know, just in time access. No way. Donald Trump has told us that isn't the case. Something else about Donald Trump: rare earths. They're getting very hot for them in America, even to the degree that they're doing a deal with Ukraine on it. You've got a project on rare earth. You tell us a little bit more about that prospect. How big is it, and how big is South Africa in a field that China has dominated, hence the concern of people like Trump?
Yeah, I think maybe first the logic for us is, you know, we take a view from time to time. As a matter of fact, I'm about to enter a board meeting just now again, and we are, that's always the discussion, looking at 5 to 10 years ahead, what is the market going to do, the specific sectors that we're in, what are the competitive landscape, all those typical strategic questions that we always ask. And what happened with our latest set of results is actually what we've been trying to avoid with certain strategic initiatives. And rare earths is one of those industries that we think will, in time to come, be become a very, very important. We saw that 3-4 years ago when we bought the asset. That this is a place where you would want to be over the long term. To be honest, what I probably did underestimate, underestimated, is the time it's going to take for the industry to really take hold. We thought it would happen a lot faster, because in the Western world, the whole rare earth industry is really, really underdeveloped. There's nothing in South Africa that's actually working yet. There are other listed companies that are probably in similar phases than we are, maybe slightly ahead, slightly behind, I don't know. But in the Western world, the industry is not well developed. And China is actually using this as a very strong bargaining tool. They are not allowing any of their technology to go out of the country at the moment. It's very difficult to find technical partners from that part of the world. And in the Western world, it's also very limited. So we think that over the next 3 to 5 years, we're going to see a lot of development in the US, in Europe, even in Australia. And our source, we have specific advantages. We believe that our rare earth component, it's about 2.2% of rare earth oxide that's trapped in that mineral, which I'm told that is a quite a good percentage. But then if you go and look at the different components that we have in there, the iodium and the praseodymium and the samarium, all those names that, you know, my science teacher at high school told me I don't have to worry about that on the table. So I've got to actually keep the names in front of me. I can't remember them. It's all the things that are used for magnets and things like that. And it's becoming very, very important for the whole energy transition, even for the defense industry. So taking a 5-year view, this is a very exciting project. Looking at what we need to report on a 6-monthly basis for a listed company, this is not this is not at the moment the big thing. And hopefully, in 5 years' time, we'll be very, very happy that we are in this.
How much of that do we have in South Africa? You know, quite often we hear South Africa is this treasure chest of unexplored opportunities. Rare earths being a new one, as far as the Western world's concerned, are we well endowed?
Yeah, there's. I'm not sure where we rank in the world in terms of size. I know that Greenland and Ukraine and these places are renowned for big sources. And what our guys always tell us is that rare earths are actually not as rare as everybody, as the name suggests. It is actually in abundance in the world. It's about having the right source and the right quality and things like that. I'm aware of 3 sources at the moment. There's a source near Polaboa that's being developed by another listed company. And then there's one near in the northern, on the border of the West, in fact, towards the Northern Cape, in the Aqualand. And then it's us. And it's different products that is available in there. But nothing that's actually really operational. I know Steenkamp's Kraal, I think there is a little bit of activity there. I'm talking under correction. But other than that, it's not a major industry in South Africa yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of those lines in the water, one hopes, that will come in due course. Andres, just to close off with, from your perspective, you're always optimistic. You are an entrepreneur. You've been at it for a long time, looking in areas where others only see problems, you see opportunities. Our country as a whole, the mining sector here has been under the cosh for so long. Are you seeing renewed, or do you have renewed vigor with this government of national unity and the political changes that finally seem to be coming through?
Yeah, I think the short answer is yes. I think we must be realistic. The big thing that we're very excited about is the possibility of the whole infrastructure spend and really stimulating. We honestly do believe that is a way of getting the economy to grow a lot faster if we can spend more on infrastructure. And that you know, I think we've hit rock bottom. All the statistics that we gather on the construction industry and on and what we see in terms of our sales of raw materials and things like that, we hit rock bottom in, I think it was 2025. Now it was 2023. We dropped bottom. We're slowly creeping up from there. Funny enough, the best year that we had in the last 10 was 2017. We're not at 2017 levels yet in terms of, if I look at the volumes that we sell, but the trend is good. I think we're starting to see more interaction with bigger road building contractors and power lines slowly being built and things like that. So as that gains momentum, I think that's going to be a very good kicker for that sector. The focus on the logistics system, the Transnet system, especially on the two export lines, that's going to help us a lot. It's a pity that, you know, just given the magnitude of the problem with Transnet, the domestic line is not receiving enough attention yet, just because I don't think there's capacity to do that as well. Because there's huge potential. You know, you know what the roads look like with all the trucks. You know, I just know what we are doing by road from the Northern Cape with our domestic sales. You know, this month we're gonna move 125,000 tons of iron ore by road from Kaptu to Vanderbijl Park at Newcastle. These things should go by rail. You know, that if we can get that going, and that's a 10-year project. I was actually quite shocked the other day when our team briefed me on the progress with Transnet, and I said, I think it's going to take another 2 to 3 years. And they said, no. We think it's going to take up to 10 years to fix. So it's going to take a while, but I think we are moving in the right direction. We had those terrible years in the Zuma era, the state capture years. I don't think we realize how bad that was for the country. But fortunately, we quite a resilient bunch of those of us that prefer to stay.
You're not going for the refugee status story.
Did you see the advert of We Buy Cars with your review Jeep status? I'll just remind you.
Oh, they're too clever, those guys. Well done to Fawn and Dirk on that one too. Andreessen, well done to you too. You've been quite happy to talk to me and to unpack where you are at the moment. It's been a tough 12-month period to report back on. Hopefully in a year's time, you'd be expecting a heck of a lot better.
I do think it's, turnaround takes time. But I do think we're making very good headway, and hopefully by this time next year we'll be smiling. I honestly believe that.
Andreessen van Heerden is the Chief Executive of Afrimat. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.